All right. Well, one thing that happens is I should have a PowerPoint ready to go, I hope. Good morning, everybody. So a few weeks ago, we gave a little preview of what's happening today. And it's going to be an episode of The Adventures of Wonder Witness and Bop Boy. So this is a project that we did in our Friday night youth group. And the coloring sheets the kids are working on were actually produced by a couple of members of the youth group as well. So we might have a moment to see some of those later on. Pretty good work was done. This is a presentation on a tool that's called 123. We've seen it here before on a Sunday morning. And if you have any questions about it by the time we're done today, all right, well, that's not what I was expecting when I hit that button. All right. It is on mouse. This is what happens probably when little ones play with this thing. Now that's what I was expecting. There we go. So this is a presentation about a tool called 123, which we have looked at here on a Sunday morning before. And if you do want any more information about it after today, just let me know. It's just a very simple framework, an outline to keep in your head to help guide your conversations with non-believers. In particular, your conversations about our faith. And it's a useful framework as well to use to help guide a lifetime of learning about how to give an answer to anyone who asks the reason for the hope that we have. You can use this 1-2-3 thing no matter how much or how little you already know about the evidence for the truth of Christianity. You don't need to be a scholar to use this one. It's very simple, and it's based on two principles. First is the very wise principle, which you all know, work smarter, not harder. And second is the principle of being biblical. This 1-2-3 thing follows the Bible, and especially the model of how the apostles themselves went about evangelizing people in the book of Acts. But instead of my telling you any more about it at the moment, let's watch our heroes in action using it. So Wonder Witness spots some trouble in the distance, and her trusty sidekick, Bop Boy, notices that it is their arch nemesis, the infamous Dr. Dubious. Knowing he must be up to no good, they confront him. And they were right. Dr. Dubious is working to persuade two innocent bystanders that Christianity is bad and dumb. He says things like faith and science can't possibly go together. Christianity is responsible for slavery and misogyny and all kinds of evil things. In short, he says the kinds of negative things about Christianity which most of us hear from non-Christians regularly. Wonder Witness steps up and says, "Not so fast." However, Dr. Dubious is not alone. He has brought another villain called the Scaly Scoffer. The Scaly Scoffer presses the case against Christianity. Christianity causes wars, he said, and I'm sure you've heard that before. The idea that religion in general has caused most of the wars in human history, and Christianity has caused more wars than anything else in the past 2,000 years. So how will our heroes meet that challenge? Interestingly, Wonder Witness chooses not to engage in the debate. She registers that she doesn't agree with the point, but she admits it for the sake of argument. She says, even if it's true that Christianity has caused wars, and then Bop Boy finishes her sentence, that would not mean Christianity is not true. What Wonder Witness has done is to activate the first level of her 1-2-3 powers. Level one is to remember to make the main thing the main thing. The main thing is Jesus' resurrection from the dead. If Jesus was raised from the dead, then Christianity is true. If he was not, then Christianity is false. Whether we like Christianity or not, has no bearing on whether it's true. The Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15, if Christ is not raised, your faith is useless. And in the book of Acts, the apostles always make Jesus' resurrection the main point of all their speeches. So you might not like everything about Christianity, but we don't choose what's true based on what we like and don't like. So while it is not true that Christianity has caused heaps of wars, that's a falsehood, Wonder Witness decided to work smarter, not harder. She doesn't need to memorize history books and statistics to debate this point. She can simply say, let's say Christianity has caused unnecessary wars. That won't change the question of whether it's true. And the same goes for anything else someone might think they don't like about our faith. Like, for example, a biblical view of something like same-sex marriage. If that was the only thing that a non-Christian wanted to talk to me about, I would gently try to point out that while, yes, I hold a position that they don't like, that doesn't change the question of whether Christianity is true. And the bystanders here get the point. I hope you do as well. The innocent bystanders realize that the scaly scoffer could talk all day about what he doesn't like about Christianity, and it would never address the point of whether Christianity is true or not. So Dr. Dubious tries a different tactic. He introduces his nefarious partner in crime, the Doubt Shouter. As you might guess, the Doubt Shouter shouts doubts. And he shouts a whole bunch of doubts about whether Christianity could really be true. How could any reasonable person believe that someone was raised from the dead? Wonder Witness politely acknowledges that it is a reasonable question to ask. She doesn't glorify any unbiblical idea of a blind faith, where just believing for the sake of believing is somehow thought to be admirable, which the Bible never does. Instead, just like the apostles in the book of Acts, Wonder Witness knows that the facts are on her side, and so she turns her superpowers up to level 2. And Dr. Dubious knows he's in trouble. Well, what's level 2? She explains that there are two historical facts, and the evidence for each of these facts is so strong that virtually no professional scholar or historian will deny either one of them. Now, that's an important point, and I mean what I said. Virtually no professional scholar or historian. I am not talking about Christian scholars and Christian historians. I am talking about all of them, Jewish, agnostic, atheist, what have you. What matters most is the evidence, but as ordinary believers, we're not scholars. We can't research all these things in depth all the time. In the same way that we can't all be doctors, but we trust people who are doctors to treat us. So we can't all be historians, but if all the scholars believe something is a fact, then we would be wise to take that seriously, don't you think? It's not a guarantee that they're right, but it's certainly a wise thing to trust the professionals. And it happens that of the thousands and thousands of historians and scholars in relevant fields, and again, I'm talking atheist, agnostic, Jewish, Christian, whatever, the overwhelming majority of them agree with these two facts, that these actually happened in history. First, Jesus really died, and second, there were witnesses who truly believed they saw him alive again. Now, the key question will be, what's the best explanation for those two facts? But before we get there, Dr. Dubious and the Doubt Shouter try something else. There are lots of popular ideas by non-scholars, by people who don't know the facts as well as they might think they do, especially on the internet, surprise, surprise. There are lots of popular ideas out there that maybe the disciples were lying about the resurrection, or maybe Jesus didn't die, but he only fainted on the cross, and things like that. And so the villains rattle off a bunch of these objections. If any of these were true, then our two historical facts aren't facts after all. So what will our heroes do now? Wonder Witness tells Bop Boy that it's time to bop him. So Bop Boy hefts his trusty bopper, ready to bop him on the head. No, Bob boy. Not Bob, but B-O-P, burden of proof. Think about this. You may or may not believe this, I've never actually been to the moon. So I have not seen for myself whether we have landed there. Don't know about you, but I haven't seen that with my own eyes. But the overwhelming consensus of scientists and experts in a position to know, they say that we have. So if I meet someone who thinks the moon landings were all a hoax, here's the key point. It is not my job to prove to him that the moon landings happened. I am reasonable to trust the professionals, unless I have very good reasons to doubt them. And so it is his job to prove to me that the moon landings are a hoax. Similarly, Bop Boy politely explains to the villains that if they want to doubt these two facts, that Jesus died and was believed to be seen alive again, then it is actually their job to convince us of that, not the other way around. The experts in the scholarship don't think the disciples were lying, for example. That seems like a really easy explanation. Oh, they just said he raised and he didn't. But the scholars who have actually looked at the evidence have said that that explanation doesn't fit the evidence. You're free to look at the evidence further if you like, but I think you're also reasonable to trust the scholars on that. Lying is not an adequate explanation. If somebody wants to doubt one of our two historical facts, then it is actually their job to convince us and not the other way around. Now, Dr. Dubius taunts our heroes. They've only seen two of his henchmen, but there is another, since together they are the Faithless Four. Prepare to face the villainous, the nefarious, the terrible. Skeptico. Hi, I'm Janet. You're not Janet. You're the abominable Skeptico. Where's your supervillain costume anyway? Ignoring Dr. Dubius, Janet asks a simple question. How do we know the disciples weren't just lying about Jesus' resurrection? Now, although the burden of proof is actually on someone who says they were lying, Wonder Witness recognizes here a polite and sincere question. And so she turns her powers up to level 3. What is power level 3? There are 3 kinds of witnesses to Jesus' resurrection. When we say that he was believed, truly believed to have been seen alive again, there are 3 kinds of people who truly believe that. And it happens that the idea that they were lying does not work with any one of these kinds of witnesses. So Jesus' own disciples had absolutely no motive for lying. In fact, when they began proclaiming Jesus' resurrection, historians agree that they faced harmful consequences for that. Now, there's some debate about how much persecution the early Christians experienced, but they absolutely had nothing to gain from this lie. And they had a lot to lose. And then you've got opponents of Jesus who came to believe in him. And the best example here is Saul of Tarsus, later known as the Apostle Paul. Now, once again, professional scholars and historians, Christian or not, agree about this. Saul of Tarsus was an enemy of the early church, and he turned around and became its greatest missionary. Based on an experience which he truly believed was an encounter with the risen Jesus. Now, non-Christian scholars don't think Paul was right, but they don't think he was lying. That's the key point here. Finally, there were women followers of Jesus who were early witnesses. In fact, they were the first witnesses to Jesus' resurrection. And it's very important to highlight the women separately, because they are extremely important witnesses to Jesus. Because in that culture, in those days, women's testimony was considered doubtful. Some ancient Jewish people thought women's testimony was never valid, while some thought they could testify, but only in some circumstances, and a man's testimony was always considered better than a woman's. Now, if you were lying about something like a resurrection, if you were just making it up, who would you make up were the first witnesses of it? Would you hang your lie on the made-up testimony of women whose testimony was considered doubtful in your culture? I don't think that's likely. Instead, you'd say it was someone whose word others would be less likely to doubt. You would pretend it was priests or someone like that who saw the resurrection first. If you were lying, that's the story you would invent. Now, this alone doesn't prove that Jesus was raised, but it does show how silly it is to think that they just made it all up. Does that make sense? Carefully considering who the first witnesses actually were shows why the burden of proof is on someone who wants to say they were lying. It shows why professional historians and scholars don't think they were lying. Well, Dr. Dubius actually has one more trick up his sleeve. It turns out that the Faithless Four are, in fact, the Faithless Five. And their fifth partner in crime is none other than the Hallucinator. Dr. Dubius introduces the Hallucinator, who just stands there seeing things that no one else can see. Why, there's a truck made of cheese over there. There's a wombat with wings. And I'm pretty sure that's a 10-foot-tall turnip farmer in a tutu. Puzzled by the arch-villain's tactic, our heroes ask the Hallucinator, "Indeed," says Dr. Dubius, "maybe your precious first witnesses to the resurrection were just seeing things that aren't there, just like the Hallucinator here." And it turns out that this is what most historians and scholars think happened. They believe Jesus really died. They don't deny that fact. And they believe the witnesses really thought they had seen Jesus alive again. They don't deny that. But most experts in these fields are not Christians themselves, and they don't believe Jesus really was raised from the dead. Instead, they often think the disciples had some kind of a psychological vision, a hallucination brought on by their grief or their religious enthusiasm or something like that. And that is, we have to admit, on the surface, a plausible explanation. A hallucination makes sense of our two historical facts. Jesus really died and people saw him again, but only because they were hallucinating. So now the burden of proof is on us. It is on Wonder Witness and Bop Boy. So they explain that everything science teaches about hallucinations makes this explanation fail, no matter how many scholars believe it. When the burden of proof is on us, we should accept it. But when it's on someone else, we should work smarter and not harder. So here, they explain, for example, considering the women witnesses of Jesus' resurrection, a hallucination doesn't explain why they found the tomb empty, does it? In any case, the sheer number of witnesses, male and female, all having the same hallucination does not make sense scientifically. And they sometimes saw the same thing at the same time. Not only the 11 gathered together in a room, but according to 1 Corinthians 15, 500 believers saw Jesus at once. And just so you know, 1 Corinthians is one of the letters that all scholars agree was genuinely written by Paul himself. Even atheist scholars will acknowledge that. They doubt some of his letters, but not that one. But you can even set aside those 500 believers. You could ask how 11 people, or even just 2 or 3, could all share the exact same hallucination of seeing the exact same thing if it's not actually there. It just doesn't make sense. Moreover, science also shows us that most hallucinations only involve one of our senses. You hear a voice that isn't there, or you see something that isn't there, or you smell something that isn't there, that kind of thing. It is only very rare that a hallucination happens with two senses, and even more rare with more than that. But according to our evidence, witnesses sometimes saw and touched and heard Jesus all in one encounter. Now that's very hard to explain as a hallucination, especially when multiple people all have the same multiple senses hallucinations at the same time. Finally, considering Saul of Tarsus, a psychological hallucination makes no sense for him. They believe that the disciples hallucinated Jesus because they were so grieved at his passing, or they were so wrapped up in religious enthusiasm for Jesus that they could not, or their brain couldn't accept that he was dead, and it generated these hallucinations. But all the scholars agree that Paul was an enemy of the church who was not grieving Jesus' death and was not enthusiastic about Christianity. Quite the opposite, in fact. And so a hallucination doesn't work for any of our witnesses. Again, no matter how many scholars believe it, I think we can meet the burden of proof on that one. And so, the faithless five resort to their last attack on Christianity. A very frequent one in my experience with skeptics, insults and name-calling. And now, in a moment of weakness, Wonder Witness loses her cool and she wants to bop them in the head. But this time it's her faithful sidekick who explains to her that such a thing won't be necessary. If these supervillains have nothing left but insults, then their evil plan is already foiled. But what I hope that you can see is that you don't need superpowers to do what Wonder Witness and Bop Boy did. And you don't need to be a scholar. All they did was follow a simple outline. Number one, they kept the main thing the main thing. They didn't waste time and energy on debates that don't matter. Jesus is coming one day. And we are responsible to tell people that he is the resurrected Lord who died for our sins, the King of God's kingdom. We are not responsible to get into every little debate and rabbit trail that somebody wants to go down. We keep the main thing, because the time is short. They stayed focused on whether Christianity is true, just like the apostles in the book of Acts, and they stayed focused on whether Jesus was really raised from the dead. It's true that Jesus' death for our sins is important, and we always emphasize that as Christians. But without his resurrection, his death was just a death. His resurrection really is the heart of our faith. Number two, our heroes remembered to focus on two key historical facts. Historians all agree that Jesus died and that the witnesses truly believe they saw him alive again. And this is a great way to work smarter, not harder. You don't need to memorize arguments to prove that Jesus didn't faint on the cross or something like that. If someone says that, you can just politely ask them. I want to stress that we need to be polite talking to non-Christians. We don't use this type of thing to try to get a gotcha and embarrass them and make them feel stupid. We try to have a good conversation, build a friendship, and politely ask them, what evidence have you got that Jesus only fainted on the cross? Since none of the scholars believe that, you might be right, but I need to know why you think that's true if it's going to be reasonable for me to believe it. You can bop them, in other words. Gently, of course, but just keep in your mind where's the burden of proof when you're having a discussion. It will save you a lot of trouble. Third, our heroes thought about who the first witnesses of Jesus' resurrection actually were. And that allowed them to assess whether an explanation like hallucinations really makes sense or not. So this is pretty easy to use, even for us non-superheroes. Now, it is true that most of us don't know about as much about these things as Wonder Witness does. She's pretty amazing. So we might not be able to use 1, 2, 3 exactly the same way she does in every case. But we can still use it. We can use it to ask questions when talking to non-Christians. We can ask questions to help guide the conversation to the resurrection if it's going elsewhere. If they say something I don't know enough about, let's say they start spouting off some medical evidence about hallucinations that I haven't seen before. Easy. I just start asking some more questions. Where did they find that? What do they think it means? You know, how? Thank you for letting me know about that. I will consider it more and we can talk about it next week. And that's how we can handle a conversation. And I can use this outline to help me think of questions to ask. For example, can the non-Christian then tell me, in light of the evidence they provided, does this explain why multiple people had the same hallucination, that kind of thing? Anyway, our heroes won the day in the end. And now the innocent bystanders want to know, if Jesus' resurrection really happened, if Christianity really is true, then what does it actually mean? But we've reached the end of today's episode of The Adventures of Wonder Witness and Bot Boy. So let me ask you, Wonder fans, how do you think our heroes will answer this question? But let me warn you, it won't be easy. Wonder Witness and Bot Boy will soon face their greatest challenge and their most fearsome enemy ever.